Luther before the legate. Chapter 7. Second interview. The next day both parties prepared for a second interview, which it seemed would be decisive. Luther's friends, who were resolved to accompany him to the legate's palace, went to the Carmelite convent. Puttinger and the Dean of Trent, both imperial counselors, and Staupitz, arrived successively. Shortly after, the doctor had the pleasure of seeing them joined by the knight Philip of Feilitzsch and Dr. Ruhl, counselors of the elector, who had received their master's order to be present at the conferences, and to protect Luther's liberty. They had reached Augsburg the previous evening. They were to keep close to him, says Mathesius, as the knight of Chlum stood by John Huss at Constance. The doctor moreover took a notary, and accompanied by all his friends, he repaired to the legate's palace. At this moment Staupitz approached him. He fully comprehended Luther's position. He knew that unless his eyes were fixed on the Lord, who is the deliverer of his people, he must fall. "My dear brother," said he seriously, "bear constantly in mind that you have begun these things in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Thus did God environ his humble servant with consolation and encouragement." When Luther arrived at the cardinal's, he found a new adversary. This was the prior of the Dominicans of Augsburg, who sat beside his chief. Luther, conformably with the resolution he had taken, had written his answer. The customary salutations being finished, he read the following declaration with a loud voice. "I declare that I honor the Holy Roman Church, and that I shall continue to honor her. I have sought after truth in my public disputations, and everything that I have said I still consider as right, true, and Christian. Yet I am but a man, and may be deceived. I am therefore willing to receive instruction and correction in those things wherein I may have erred. I declare myself ready to reply orally or in writing to all the objections and charges that the Lord Legate may bring against me. I declare myself ready to submit my theses to the four universities of Bâle, Fribourg and Briscoe, Louvain, and Paris, and to retract whatever they shall declare erroneous. In a word, I am ready to do all that can be required of a Christian. But I solemnly protest against the method that has been pursued in this affair, and against the strange pretension of compelling me to retract without having refuted me. Undoubtedly nothing could be more reasonable than these propositions of Luther's, and they must have greatly embarrassed a judge who had been tutored beforehand as to the judgment he should pronounce." The legate, who had not expected this protest, endeavored to hide his confusion by affecting to smile at it, and by assuming an appearance of mildness. "This protest," said he to Luther, with a smile, "is unnecessary. I have no desire to dispute with you either privately or publicly, but I propose arranging this matter with the kindness of a parent." The sum of the cardinal's policy consisted in laying aside the stricter forms of justice, which protect the accused, and treating the whole affair as one of mere administration between a superior and an inferior, a convenient method that opens a wider field for arbitrary proceedings. Continuing with the most affectionate air, De Vio said, "My dear friend, abandon, I beseech you, so useless an undertaking. Bethink yourself, acknowledge the truth, and I am prepared to reconcile you with the Church and the Sovereign Bishop. Retract, my friend, retract, such is the Pope's wish. Whether you will or whether you will not, is of little consequence. It would be a hard matter for you to kick against the pricks." Luther, who saw himself treated as if he were already a rebellious child and an outcast from the Church, exclaimed, "I cannot retract, but I offer to reply, and that too in writing. We had debating enough yesterday." De Vio was irritated at this expression, which reminded him that he had not acted with sufficient prudence, but he recovered himself, and said with a smile, "Debated? My dear son, I have not debated with you. Besides, I have no wish to debate, but to please the most serene Elector Frederick, I am ready to listen to you, and to exhort you in a friendly and paternal manner." Luther could not understand why the legate was so much scandalized at the term he employed, for, thought he, "if I had not wished to speak with politeness, I ought to have said, not debated, but disputed and wrangled, for that is what we really did yesterday." De Vio, who felt that in the presence of the respectable witnesses who attended this conference, he must at least appear anxious to convince Luther, reverted to the two propositions, which he had pointed out as fundamental errors, being firmly resolved to permit the reformer to speak as little as possible. Availing himself of his Italian volubility, he overwhelmed the doctor with objections, without waiting for any reply. At one time he jeered, at another scolded. He declaimed with passionate warmth, mingled together the most heterogeneous matters, quoted St. Thomas and Aristotle, clamored, stormed against all who thought differently from himself, and apostrophized Luther. More than 10 times did the latter try to speak, but the legate immediately interrupted him and overwhelmed him with threats. Retract! Retract! This was all that was required of him. He raved, he domineered, he alone was permitted to speak. Staupitz took upon himself to check the legate. Pray, allow Brother Martin time to reply to you, said he. But De Vio began again. He quoted the extravagances and the opinions of St. Thomas. He had resolved to have all the talk to himself during this interview. If he could not convince, and if he dared not strike, he would do his best to stun by his violence. Luther and Staupitz saw very clearly that they must renounce all hope, not only of enlightening De Vio by discussion, but still more of making any useful confession of faith. Luther therefore reverted to the request he had made at the beginning of the sitting, and which the cardinal had then eluded. Since he was not permitted to speak, he begged that he might at least be permitted to transmit a written reply to the legate. Staupitz seconded this petition. Several of the spectators joined their entreaties to his, and Cajetan, notwithstanding his repugnance to everything that was written, for he remembered that such writings are lasting, scriptum monet, at length consented. The meeting broke up. The hopes that had been entertained of seeing the matter arranged at this interview were deferred. They must wait and see the issue of the next conference. The permission which the general of the Dominicans had given Luther to take time for his reply, and to write his answer, to the 2 distinct accusations touching indulgences and faith, was no more than strict justice required, and yet we must give De Vio credit for this mark of moderation and impartiality. Luther quitted the cardinal, delighted that his request had been granted. On his way to Cajetan, and on his return, he was the object of public attention. All enlightened men were as much interested in his affair as if they were to be tried themselves. It was felt that the cause of the gospel, of justice, and of liberty, was then pleading at Augsburg. The lower classes alone held with Cajetan, and they no doubt gave the reformer some significant proofs of their sentiments, for he took notice of them. It became more evident every day that the legate would hear no other words from Luther than these, I retract, and Luther was resolved not to pronounce them. What will be the issue of so unequal a struggle? How can it be imagined that all the power of Rome matched against a single man should fail to crush him? Luther sees this. He feels the weight of that terrible hand under which he has voluntarily placed himself. He loses all hope of returning to Wittenberg, of seeing his dear Philip again, of mingling once more with those generous youths in whose hearts he so delighted to scatter the seeds of life. He beholds the sentence of excommunication suspended over his head, and doubts not that it will soon fall upon him. These prospects afflict his soul, but he is not cast down. His trust in God is not shaken. God can break the instrument he has been pleased to make use of until this hour, but he will uphold the truth. Happen what may, Luther must defend it to the last. He therefore begins to prepare the protest that he intends presenting to the legate. It would appear that he devoted part of the October 13th to this task.